Dateline Washington, Thursday, April 9th, 2009. Hello again from the nation's capital. I'm Greg Corumbus. In this edition, the piracy problem. We'll talk with James Robbins, senior editorial page writer for the Washington Times, about the problem of piracy off the Horn of Africa, but also surrounding many other of the world's busiest shipping lanes. Why are we seeing such a huge rise in piracy in just the past few years? What decisions made after the conclusion of the Cold War are having an impact on the piracy problem? And we'll also ask the question of what kind of instability is occurring in nations like Somalia, which is closest to the piracy action. We'll discuss the depth of the problem and potential solutions to this long term, again with James Robbins of the Washington Times. Also in this edition, do you prefer capitalism or socialism? According to a new Rasmussen Report survey, only 53% of Americans prefer capitalism, with 20% choosing socialism and 27% just not sure. Does this represent a massive shift in American thinking, or does it simply show that most Americans don't know what capitalism and socialism are? We'll talk about that and the significance of this ignorance with Rich Brake, co-chairman of the National Civic Literacy Board at the Intercollegiate Studies Institute. Plus, the week in politics. What will the Obama administration do about the dramatic rise in piracy off the Horn of Africa and elsewhere around the world? We'll also get a review of his performance overseas at the G20 summit, NATO meetings, Turkey, and in Iraq. When we're joined by John Gizzi of Human Events, we'll also get John's take on the exoneration of Alaska Senator Ted Stevens, the ongoing recount fight in New York's 20th congressional district, as well as the fight that never seems to end over the Minnesota Senate seat. All of that, plus an extended dose of Thursday's top stories, are straight ahead on this edition of Dateline Washington. We begin with a look at the piracy off the coast of Somalia that is affecting an American crew, an American ship, and still has an American captain held hostage. The conversation with James Robbins of the Washington Times begins right now. You are listening to Dateline Washington on the Radio America Network. I'm Greg Corumbus. Thanks for being with us. My next guest in this edition is James Robbins, senior editorial writer for the Washington Times. In Thursday's edition of the paper, he wrote the editorial related to the pirates seizing the American commercial vessel Maersk Alabama off the Horn of Africa early on Wednesday morning. He goes in the article to talk about why this problem is escalating and what the proper solutions might be. And Jim, it's always good to have you with us.
My pleasure.
The facts have been out there for a while now that piracy, especially in that area of the world, is much higher than it was just a couple of years ago. You go into a little more detail, though, to explain why. Why are those numbers so much higher there and in some other places?
Well, I think the reason why it's high there and in specific other places is because those are choke points on the international sea lanes where ships have to go. So naturally, that's where pirates are going to congregate. And the specific reasons why there are more pirates today than in the past have to do with, number one, fewer ships out there patrolling the seas, making sure that pirates are kept deterred. And secondly, the recent practice of paying ransom for crew or passengers who are taken captive by pirates, because, of course, the more you pay for something, the more of it you're going to get.
Let's follow up on both of those for a moment. Why do we have less security in these key shipping lanes than we did a few years ago?
Well, since the Cold War, the United States and other Western navies have been building down fairly significantly. About 50% of the ships that we have today that we had in the Cold War are the same of the smaller classes of ships, destroyers and frigates. And the British have also built down and others, so that, you know, when you have fewer ships patrolling the sea lanes, they just can't keep their eye on as many threats, and so it gives the pirates opportunities, and they take advantage of them.
We know from a guest we had on yesterday that the odds of being hit by a pirate are about 1 in 1,000 right now, but that's much better than they were just a short time ago. Talk a little bit more about the paying of the ransom. Why have countries and businesses decided to go that route for the most part, rather than standing up to these people?
Partly it's because once you have a hostage situation, basically you're paying for the lives of the people. It's very difficult to mount rescue missions. They don't always know where people are being held. The pirates generally will take the ships to some safe haven somewhere, and then, you know, if you try to mount a rescue mission, you could wind up without the people and without the ship. So it's easier just to pay. Another reason is that shippers have very high insurance rates as it is, And so sometimes they just want to quietly pay off the pirates and go on their merry way and not get insurance people and folks involved because it could raise their rates and incur them long-term costs. So they see it as more of a short-term outlay to avoid a long-term cost. But, of course, they're not looking at the long-term effects on the odds of being victimized by the pirates again, because once you start paying them, the pirates, you know, think it's a good idea to attack you again.
We're talking with James Robbins, senior editorial writer for the Washington Times. And, Jim, another thing you point out in this editorial in Thursday's edition of the Times is that a lot of these areas, the problems are most intense, especially off the coast of Somalia, because of the tremendous instability in the country closest to where this is happening. Talk a little bit about what's going on in Somalia and some of the other places where the piracy is most active.
Yeah, Somalia has been a basket case state for many years. I mean, people remember Black Hawk Down and those events. I mean, Somalia for a long time has just been kind of a lawless area. Right now, the country is de facto divided into three different countries with competing claims to rule. And so when you have a situation like that, plus armed groups roaming the countryside, various jihadists and terrorists making life difficult for people, it's easy for pirates to ply their trade because there's no police force to go stop them. There's no army that's going to come and run them out of their ports. There's certainly no Navy that's, you know, Somali Navy that's going to take care of the problem. And so when you have a land-based instability, it can sometimes be translated into a seaborne threat. And some people say that the real answer to the pirate problem is to fix the problem in Somalia. And that may be true in the abstract and in the long run, but it's going to take a long time and a great international effort to figure out the problems of Somalia, because it really is a basket case nation.
Jim, another thing you point out in this editorial is that military ships, formerly recognized naval vessels and vessels of other nations protecting the shipping lanes, are able to defend commercial vessels from piracy, but the vessels themselves, the rules are quite a bit murkier. What do we know about what they can and can't do?
Well, it's pretty uncertain under the law of the sea exactly what a merchantman or a private security ship can do. A lot of vessels have unarmed crew. For example, in the recent U.S. flag vessel, the crew had no arms, and they took back their ship just apparently by brute force and negotiation, which is pretty interesting. But, for example, the only ships that can actually seize a pirate vessel have to be the recognized navies of a recognized state. So a civilian company like Blackwater, for example, which offers maritime security service, it's unclear what exactly they can do. I mean, they can surveil, they can try to dissuade. Can they open fire on pirates who are attacking them in self-defense? One would argue, yes, I mean, if they're being attacked, but can they then defend another vessel? It's really an unsettled part of the law. One thing is clear, the pirates do not recognize these niceties. The pirates clearly do not care about international law. So, loosening up the rules of engagement might be one way of dealing with this threat.
And so what's the answer here? Is it greater military presence in these areas back to where it was during the years of the Cold War? Or is there another element of this as well?
I think part of it would be stepping up patrols and trying to deal with it that way, at least trying to dissuade the pirates through some kind of presence. We really don't have the ships to do it, although there are a couple of Navy task force groups out there in that part of the world attempting to do it. Probably part of it is not paying the ransom every time, trying to fight back, maybe arming the merchantmen. I think that the pirates really have to be deterred through force at some point. You can't deter them through passing resolutions or making statements. Some pirate vessels have to be sunk. Maybe some of their ports could be bombed if you can do it in a way that doesn't endanger civilian lives, just going after the pirate vessels as opposed to the pirate dwelling spaces or something like that. But it's going to take a more forceful response than we've seen so far, because for all the efforts that have been done in recent years, piracy is just burgeoning. It's four times worse last year than the year before, and this year it's even worse than that.
It's been said as this piracy problem has grown over the past couple of years, and certainly in the last 24 hours or so, James, some folks are saying these are the same as terrorists. Others say they're not because their ideology is not the same. They just want money. They're not after some larger cause of global domination or anything like that. What's the best way to classify these people?
I would call it, well, they fit under a broad category called transnational threat, which is just non-state actors who engage in violence. Which includes terrorists, but it also includes drug runners and other people. I think most of the pirates are interested in profit, but in the name of profit, they can also help move arms and personnel that are tied into terror groups. A lot of them have ethnic and religious ties to various types of insurgencies. It doesn't mean that they're insurgents themselves, but sometimes they work with them as a matter of convenience, and they definitely enable the international trade and terror. So I wouldn't call them terrorists per se. Certainly not all of them are, but they're definitely part of that enabling structure.
And before we let you go here, James, do you suspect that this incident with the Maersk Alabama is going to change our approach and maybe the international approach to this problem? Or depending on how it turns out, will it be forgotten about within a number of weeks?
Well, it's interesting that it has created all this attention because, of course, it was an American flagship, but within a few days before that, there were five other international ships seized. So it's not like it's a new problem. It's maybe new to Americans because suddenly they seized an American ship. I would hope that this would generate some kind of attention. But again, there has been some attention from the international community before this, and it hasn't really been effective yet. So I think what they really have to do is bring the right kind of attention to bear, which I think is the use of force.
James, unfortunately, our time is up. Thank you, sir, very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
James Robbins is the senior editorial writer at the Washington Times. This is Dateline Washington.